Welcome to the Global Research News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman. It's a joint initiative with globalresearch.ca, and the printed material on the website combined with the on-air material on this program. Well, I hope you get very used to it, because I can't imagine a better place to be well informed of what's going on worldwide in various countries, certainly what's going on here in the U.S., but really a global stage. And I'm delighted to have Diana Johnstone as my guest today. Diana is a longtime noted political writer, an essayist, an activist. From 1979 to 1990, she was European editor for In These Times, based right here in Chicago where I live. And she was press officer for the Green Group in the European Parliament from 1990 to 96. Her books include The Politics of Euro Missiles, and the best book that I read several on the Balkan Wars, and by far the best one was Fool's Crusade. If you think you know what the Balkan Wars were all about, well, you don't know it as well unless you've read Diana's book. And it's still timely, because what happened then gets repeated earlier since. The same old story. Diana, welcome to the program. I'm delighted to have you back.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me, Steve.
Oh, it's indeed an honor. You're one of my heroes. I have a lot of heroes as I read more wonderful books by wonderful people like you. I have my gallery of heroes, and my only lament, Diana, is we need so many more.
Well, I guess you're an addition.
Well, in a very small way. I started late. I started by accident late, post age 70. I guess that might be an inspiration to others that it's never too late to begin doing the things that you believe in. And it's a wonderful way to spend my retirement. That's how I've chosen to do it.
Well, that's just great.
Well, there's so much going on. There always is. It seems to get more and more muddled, more and more anxiety written with world conflicts, with so much going on. The latest article that you wrote, that I saw, you wrote last month, and you wrote it on the Gaza war from your perspective in Paris. If there's anything more recent, Diana, I haven't spotted it. Was that your most recent?
Yes, it was, because right now I'm writing speeches that I'm going to be giving on occasions commemorating the 10th anniversary of the beginning of the NATO bombing of Yugoslavia.
Will that be something that can be posted online?
I don't know. I suppose it can. I haven't finished writing them yet, and I'm into some interviews and so on for that event. I'm going to be speaking in Vicenza, Italy, because it's the NATO U.S. military headquarters. You know, they bombed Yugoslavia from bases there.
Oh, indeed. Indeed.
And I'll go to Belgrade, too, for a 10th anniversary.
It seems so long ago now, Diana, but to me, as we bring it up, it seems like yesterday, and it was a horrible time, and I've quoted people like you, Edward Herman, who you know well, Harold Pinter, talking about that horrible time when slaughter from the air came down on innocent civilians, the way we do it all the time. I'm sorry, Diana. That music means we have a commercial break.
Okay.
Let's take that, and we'll come back, and we'll pick things up.
Okay.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Diana Johnstone. Diana, let me just suggest one thing to you, if it's possible. Either before or after you give your talk on the Balkan Wars, I'm sure you'll write it. There'll be a printed text that you'll work on. If you can send it to me, I'll give it to my editor and co-host, Michelle Chosadovsky. I'm almost certain he'll post it on Global Research, if you'd like that.
Well, you know, I think he may be at one of these events.
Oh, my goodness. But, I know he's been world traveling. He's been away for about 3 weeks, and mostly in Asia. He said he'd be in Europe as well. If you see him, then you may suggest it to him.
Well, yes, that could well be. I'm going to give very different speeches, though, in the two places.
Well, we can get them both posted.
The situation is quite different because in Italy, I mean, Italy is a NATO member and
yes.
is responsible for, you know, is co-responsible for these wars because they go along with the U.S. just as, you know, as a satellite. And there is a movement there against that, and so I'm going to encourage that anti-NATO movement, which is a movement that is growing in Europe now as we come up to the 60th anniversary of NATO.
Oh, I certainly support that movement, and I remember one of the Harold Pinter's comments on the Balkan Wars, Diana, where he talked about the U.S. using NATO as a missile against the people attacked. I guess Harold Pinter could say it about as well as anybody. But,
well, yes, that's true. But, you know, also the fact, the whole purpose of that war was in order to give a new mission to NATO, to revive NATO after the end of the Cold War. I mean, that was the real purpose of the Kosovo War. It had nothing to do with humanitarian impulses toward the Kosovo Albanians, who are now in worse situation than they were before. But it was precisely in order to strengthen NATO, build a U.S. base in Kosovo, which they began building the moment they walked in, which they obviously had been planning because you don't just suddenly build a base, you know, if you haven't thought about it, a little bit ahead of time. It's very clear, it's clear and clear that that whole war against Yugoslavia was part of a Drang nach Osten. Anybody remember that old expression that was used about the Germans? Pushing eastward, only now it's the United States and NATO pushing eastward, surrounding Russia, moving into the Middle East, and so on and so on. And so it was the opening of a whole new era of aggression.
Oh, indeed. And, of course, a continuation of the situation in the Balkans that began, I guess, at the end of the 80s or early 90s with the breakup of Yugoslavia. Milosevic's biggest crime, Diana, I guess, was he was a little bit too independent, and we don't tolerate independence in this country. We demand all sovereign states be more subservient to us than to their own people. So we invent bad guys.
Well, yeah, especially that one, because the funny thing is that Milosevic was very pro-American. He'd been a banker in New York for the Yugoslav Bank and spoke very good English and liked America and thought he was a big friend. So, you see, but it doesn't matter. You pick your enemies when you need them strategically.
Oh, indeed.
And so he was demonized by the media because the U.S. wanted to break up Yugoslavia and move in and make a lot of little, they broke it up into little dependent states. Two of them are formerly occupied, Bosnia and the region of Kosovo are NATO-occupied regions, and the others are more or less subservient through various forms of blackmail and pressure.
And as you say, Kosovo is in worse shape now than it was way back then.
Well, it is, because it's now no longer part of it's been detached from Serbia, and the Serbian government cared about it and, you know, took care of certain things, and now it's just an occupied satellite with a big military base, which is the main economic activity there, aside from the crime, which is the only thing people have to turn to, like drug smuggling and prostitution. Yeah, it's massive unemployment and.
I haven't yet.
And the worst of all is the hatred that was sown by that war.
Oh,
between
indeed.
The ethnic groups.
Indeed, I have not kept completely current on what's going on, but I believe the KLA thug, Hasim Saci, is the prime minister. Is he still prime minister?
Yeah, I guess he is, but, yeah, it doesn't much matter. I mean, the country is totally in the hands of these more or less gangstery people that the U.S. chose. You know, they shoved aside the well-known Albanian leaders and chose these armed rebels, which they armed. I mean, they're just puppets that were put in by the United States.
Oh, absolutely. In the case of Thaci and KLA, with the strong connections to organized crime and who knows what else.
Yeah, everybody who knows anything about that region knows that very well. Notice, notably, the Germans who, the German intelligence reports on that are very frank. I don't think there's anybody in the United States that is that frank about the situation now, because they like, especially the Democrats, I mean, they like to present that as this was our wonderful, successful war. Because Americans didn't get killed. That's a successful war. Never mind what happened to the people we bombed.
Indeed. Well, they present Iraq as another successful war over here, Diana. I mean, it's astonishing, and Iraq has gone under the radar now. You don't hear all that much about it. A little bit, but not very much. Afghanistan, of course, is quite violent, so we send more U.S. troops over to be put into that meat grinder without any hope in the world that anything good will come out of it. The more they send, the more will be killed, and it goes on and on and on and on in one part of the world and another.
Yeah, well, there's a big difference because, I mean, in Kosovo and in Yugoslavia, NATO attacked the Serbs who didn't really understand why they were being attacked and still don't and never fought back, really. But, you know, you get into a place like Afghanistan, and the main occupation there of men is to shoot at foreigners. It's been that way for centuries.
Oh, indeed, and they just like Iraq, Afghanistan has a history of being very, very inhospitable to occupiers, and Iraq calmed down a little bit, and I'll have a guest on who is there right now and will be back later. Oh, maybe in a week or so he'll be back, and we'll talk about what he saw. Most recently on the ground in Iraq, Dajemail, who's...
Yes, I know his work. He's been wonderful.
Oh, he's done wonderful work, and he's there right now. He went back to get an assessment and write about it, and he'll be on the program to talk about it. But a terrible mess there. It's pretty much out of the news now. But the occupation continues. I forgot my train of thought. The comment I wanted to make was that the only reason that the violence there calmed down was we bought off the resistance. We put them on our payroll. We paid them. And I think initially it began by paying people directly, the military paying them directly. And then I think it changed, and I don't have all my facts on this, but I think it changed that we basically put some people in charge as kind of bosses, controlling their own groups of people, and we gave them a huge amount of money to let them dole out as they pleased. So you pay people who are desperate, they don't have enough to live on, and they're very grateful for that. They don't want the paychecks to stop. So the violence calms down, but sooner or later it's going to pick up again.
Well, I haven't any comment to make on that, because I think your guest next week is going to be infinitely more knowledgeable of that than I am.
Oh, and certainly more knowledgeable than I am, Diana. But Iraq, Afghanistan, sooner or later, Afghanistan so recently kicking out the Russians. My goodness, they certainly don't love us any more than they did the Russians. They want us out, too.
Well, yes, of course. But you know about that. I mean, everybody knows about that, about the fact that we supported the Islamic extremists who now are fighting against us. But But what fewer people seem to know in the States, I may be wrong about this, is that those are the people, the same people that we more or less encouraged to go into Bosnia to fight against the Serbs. And that's only recently been, I mean, it's known in Europe. I don't know how much is known in Europe that Osama bin Laden was actually in Bosnia supporting our allies, that is to say, Izetbegovic, who was also an Islamic extremist, against the Serbs, because the United States had decided that they could play the Muslim party in Bosnia as its pawn, and was the Clinton administration and was allied to Osama bin Laden there.
Well, Michelle Chosudovsky has written about Osama bin Laden, Diana.
I know he has, but I don't know how many people in the United States know about this.
Oh, very few. Osama is a CIA asset, not an agent, but an asset through the Pakistani ISI.
Well, he was then. I mean, I don't know. I'm not going to get into this. I would rather stick to the U.S. and Europe because when we get into the Middle East, I'm a little out of my field.
Oh, indeed. Indeed. Well, let's take another break with that music, and then we'll be right back.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
It's now winter. Hello, cold. Hello, Mr. Flu. Oh yeah, welcome aboard the ship of irritating sickness. But wait! Ahoy! The sickness answer! GetTheTea.com. That's GetTheTea.com. Let life change tea. Battle your yuck so you can have your life back. Bye-bye cold. Bye-bye Mr. Flu. And, oh by the way, you toxins and chemicals, get the out of here. Feel better? Lose weight? Call us. 928-308-0408. That's 928-308-0408. Or you can order online at GetTheTea.com. That's GetTheTea.com. Make an investment in your life. P.S. I've been drinking it for years.
Bring it very close to home for you. I don't know what is happening at the moment. We certainly have a very grave economic crisis going on globally, and I'm looking at a January 29th BBC headline that says, huge crowds join French strikes. Thousands, many thousands, huge crowds around the country protesting because of the handling of the economic crisis. And down into the piece, it talks about 65,000 on the streets of Paris. Is this still going on?
Well, yeah, there are just waves of strikes of different sorts. For instance, I mean, there's the university has been on strike against reforms that would, because the general attitude of this Sarkozy government is the public services cost money and cut them back, and that's all for education and even education and so on. But, you know, the problem, I would like to look at the problem more generally than whether or not there are strikes. There certainly are strikes, and there certainly will be more of them. But I think that there are a couple of main factors to look at. We now have a world economic crisis that we've never seen before. It's absolutely extraordinary. It started with the United States, and it swept across the world because we had this globalized financial system, which in fact was a huge ripoff. Okay, so we have collapsing economies. Capitalism is now collapsing the way communists used to predict it would. And there are no communists left to offer any answers. Now, I think it's a very ironic situation. let me say Marxist rather than communist, but just that we're in a funny situation now where the collapse of capitalism seems to be happening, and there's no real political force that that has answers. I think that will come because I think you have to see a major crisis happening sort of in slow motion. People don't catch on right away what's happening, and it doesn't happen. It's like continental shift, you know, in whether things are fast or slow depends on our perceptions. And you have some enormous crisis happening, but it's sort of in slow motion, and people don't catch on. And so you don't have the political forces here that really have answers. In fact, some of the most obvious answers, which is nationalize the banks, are coming from the right of the political spectrum rather than the left. Somehow the left has gotten so wound up in issues in lifestyle issues that they haven't any more any economic policy. I mean, the left for quite a while now has been more concerned about immigrant rights, gay marriage. These are all what I would call personal rights issues, but not economic policy. So economic policy has been neglected. So you don't have a body of political economists who have answers to this crisis, which is the crisis that Marx predicted, you know, over a century ago. It's very, very strange. The other main factor is that all of the European countries are now tied into the European Union, which makes any solution impossible. And that is going to lead to big crisis.
Well, I think that's a major, major problem. You've got some countries in better shape than others, and yet, combined, they may only be as strong as their weakest link. I'm not an economist, so I don't understand this very well, but I've read some things that there are countries like Greece and Ireland, Italy, maybe a number that are very weak, but some especially weak. I think Ireland, Greece, may be about as weak as any. And if either one goes down, it would reverberate across the whole EU and have terrible repercussions. And this unnatural alliance they put together, now how this will play out, I have no idea. In the U.S., Diana, I think people don't really understand if a bank goes down. The only thing they understand is if they lose their job, and if their neighbor loses their job, they'll worry that maybe they'll be next. Well, I've had economists on this program saying our government is notorious for putting out absolute rubbish in the economic data. They just plain lie. They don't tell the truth. So they report the last 3 months, 500,000 jobs or so were lost. These people say it's anywhere from 800,000 to 1 million since November, and there's no end in sight to this. And you can translate that down to the moment, and that means that something like every 5 seconds in the U.S., somebody loses a job. I mean,
well,
go ahead.
They're losing jobs here too. I mean, it's the same thing. They're losing jobs for one thing because the jobs have gone overseas. I mean, the productive jobs in the United States are. I have some music there.
Yes, we need to take another break, Diana. Let's do that. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back. I'm on with Diana Johnstone. It's so true, Diana, that what's going on economically, it's unlike anything I think you and I have seen. in our lifetimes. And I truly believe that there never has been anything like this in economic history, where there have been terrible calamities in various countries, but there has never been anything on a world scale like this. You were talking about how I love to use the word exporting good jobs to low-wage countries so companies can lower their labor costs, their biggest cost. Well, of course, they're wrecking the major countries. France, if it does it, the U.S. Certainly has done it for decades. And what are people here to do? I mean,
I mean, the thing is, this is kind of obvious in a way. I mean, I think you don't have to be much of an economist to see that if you're turning the rich countries into consumer countries, and putting all of the manufacturing in low income, in low labor cost countries. But how long can you keep consuming if you're not manufacturing anything? I mean, you do that to bring down the wages in the early industrialized countries. You bring down the wages, and people don't have the money anymore to buy these goods. And of course, in the United States, for a long time, they kept buying them by buying them with money they didn't have, by going into debt, and of course that has collapsed. You have the same thing. You have to have some kind of balance between wages and prices. I mean, between what there is that's made and who can buy it. And that means it's the old Ford system. The people would earn enough to buy the car they made. This globalization has destroyed that balance entirely. So, in fact, the Chinese can still keep producing all this stuff, but the Americans can't keep buying it because they don't have any money. And there's a bit of the same problem everywhere. And Britain was going to do just finances, you know, get rid of their industry and get rid of their labor force and so on, and just do finance. And then finance collapses, so they're in trouble. And this is happening all over. And so the word that is going to come back into use is protectionism. And of course that's a bad word, but the problem is that there has to be some kind of framework for the balance between production and consumption. And right now there's no framework for that balance whatsoever. And now in the United States will certainly become protectionist. They already are, and they have the means to do it. I don't know exactly how. That gets very complicated. The problem is in Europe, it isn't so much that the countries are tied together that one falling will pull down the others. It's that no country can do anything. No country can do anything because all of the economic rules are made at the level of the economic European Union in an undemocratic way, and totally according to the ideology of free market, much more so than in the United States.
But the ideology of free markets, Diana, is a free for the big corporate interests, and none bigger and none more powerful in the U.S. than Wall Street, the big bankers. And nothing or crumbs for ordinary people who seem to be getting fewer and fewer of them. And you're right, if people over the years end up with less and less income and this inflation built into the system, we may be going through a deflationary period now, but the absolute reckless amount of money creation absolutely guarantees a very serious future inflation problem.
I'm not so sure about that. I mean, I think their expert opinion is different about that.
I've seen divided opinions, indeed.
Yeah, there are divided opinions about that, whether it's inflation or deflation.
I think the ones who see no inflation say that you've got all this money being printed, but it's not being circulated, so it isn't generating inflation. And then when things get better, the Fed will pull it back. I don't think the Fed has a very good history of pulling it back. So my guess, and I don't know, and again, I'm not an economist, but my guess is whatever the Fed may pull back, it won't be enough. And at some point in time, the so-called velocity of money will go to work again, and inflation will be driven up. One economist who came on this program, John Williams, refers to hyperinflation. That's what he sees. Whether he's right or not, I don't know. I certainly hope he's wrong.
Yeah, but wait a minute. Where's the money? How can you get inflation by just giving money to banks to pay the debts? The banks, they keep saying the banks should loan, but the problem is that the banks haven't got anybody to loan to because nobody has the collateral to take a loan.
Oh, indeed. I'm referring to when things would improve at some point.
Well,
they're going to get worse.
Well,
they won't anytime soon, absolutely. I mean, this could go on for years, as bad or worse than it is now. But at some point, and the money creation machine doesn't stop. The numbers are staggering. One of the latest numbers I saw was $9 trillion and counting. And I saw another one, $11 trillion. I don't know what's right. But the trillions keep pouring out. And at some point, in a few years, in 5 years, in 10 years, there's all this money sitting around.
Well, actually it isn't, because all of those trillions are to support the trillions that have vanished. I mean, you have all of this money that has, in fact, disappeared. And all of this is on paper anyway, because...
Oh, it's all on paper. I don't know what they're doing with it.
The real inflation is when people, ordinary people, have a lot of money, and they don't.
Well,
it's
they
just the people that have the money.
Well, they certainly
the
don't
The money
know.
That is supposedly in the banks or something doesn't really matter, it seems to me. The real problem is to have... production of an economic production of things that are needed. One of the problems of the United States, makes it particularly difficult to start over again, is that there is a glut of manufactured goods that people already have. A whole lot of gadgets and things. And,
indeed.
I mean, what they're going to need, what's going to be in short supply is housing and food. I mean, the basics, but the extra things are pretty much, people are pretty much saturated with them.
Well, the big household problem is people are very, very over indebted. They're maxed out.
Yeah, I know.
On everything, on refinancing their homes that they never should have done and spent the money. If they did it and saved the money, it's one thing, but they went out and spent it, spending money they didn't have, and on their credit cards, they were over indebted in credit cards. So the credit card companies are finding more and more of their holders defaulting. Of course, defaulting homeowners, that is a major, major problem. And the new Obama plan will end up doing very, very little to solve the problem. It's a terrible plan, just like the rest of the packages coming out of Washington, the bailout for the bankers on the one hand, the stimulus that will go mostly to business, not people in need, the mortgage plan that again is more for the bankers than for the people losing their homes, and there's no teeth in it to make mortgage lenders lower the burden on homeowners who simply can't make their monthly payments. There's only a suggestion to them that they consider doing something like this. That's like suggesting to a bank robber that would you reconsider and not rob our bank? Well, the bank robber is already robbing it, so there's no reconsideration. So it really is a terrible plan. Some people will be helped, but the great majority will not be helped. And at best, Diana, the plan works by lowering the principal that people owe, people who can't afford to pay, lowering their principal to a fixed percentage of their income, 31%. But don't provide any relief to the principal. Add the residual they don't pay now to the principal, meaning the principal continues to grow as the values of their homes continues to fall. So all you do is delay the problem for a later date. Instead of defaulting tomorrow or next month, they may default next year or in 2 years. No solution. A terrible plan.
Well, I'll take your word for it. I have nothing particularly good to say for that plan. But I'm just seeing over here that there's no agreement between the members of the European Union on any plan, although they're facing a crisis that is equally grave, although it comes in a little bit later. But the banking system is facing huge debts from Eastern Europe and so on and so on.
Oh, indeed. And one of the guests I recently had on, Bill Engdahl, he wrote an important article on the crisis of European banking and how tied to that problem the Western European banks are. And he's an economist. He understands this the way I don't understand it. And he has contacts, and the contacts he has, high-level contacts, who've told him that this is really a calamitous situation, and push will come to shove, and this will be another one of the many shoes that have been dropping. I just can't imagine how bad this will get when all the shoes drop, Diana. And millions more people will be thrown out of work. And there are 20,000 U.S. troops to be deployed on U.S. streets because there is expected civil unrest because of this economic crisis. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I'll make a rather unpleasant remark, but I think a lot of the world would be very happy if the American troops had to go home to put down troubles in the United States.
Indeed. Indeed, they're bringing them home from Iraq. They let the Iraqis do it.
Afghanistan and every place else. I mean, they're keeping building. With all this financial crisis, the United States is going on building bases, expanding, preparing for new wars. Now, I want to talk about that with the little time we have left.
Okay.
Because they're going on as if nothing was wrong, as if they still had billions and trillions of dollars to conquer the world, because they're going right ahead with the same war policy that they've had all along. And I don't know when we're going to have another break, but I would just like to say something about that, because I think this very dangerous thing, in the middle of all this economic crisis, nobody is even noticing that NATO is expanding and the United States keeps insisting on expanding and surrounding Russia to make just what we need, another Cold War, which could be a hot war this time, because the United States is being more aggressive than it was toward the Soviet Union.
Oh, indeed, Diana. A few months back, I wrote an article I call Reinventing the Cold War, exactly what you're talking about, encircling Russia and China with military bases. And, of course, we had the Georgian business last August, a terrible business made in Washington. And, I mean, the Russians just wouldn't stand for it.
Well, I mean, that was a minor matter compared to what we may have ahead of us.
Oh, indeed.
The most dangerous thing of all, and you see it, is the United States' insistence on bringing Ukraine into NATO. I want to particularly stress that, because that is the most reckless, dangerous thing in our whole policy. So it's presented in the American media as, we're going to satisfy Ukraine's desire to be in NATO. There's no such thing as Ukraine's desire to be in NATO. The polls show that most Ukrainians do not want to be in NATO. The puppets that the United States has put in charge through its phony U.S. government finance Orange Revolution represent maybe half the country, I would say less, the western half, that once was a part of Poland. And you see, I want to stress this. The place that the Bosnian War started in Croatia was a place called Krajina. You remember?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you don't. But anyway, it's
Krajina.
Oh, I do. Krajina. That's the same word, a Slavic word, as Ukraine. It means the borderland. And Ukraine is a borderland, historically a borderland between Russia and what was once a Polish empire. Brzezinski, who is the main advocate of this policy of expansion, is the son of a Polish ambassador who is carrying on a historic Polish policy of expansion because Poland once controlled, Ukraine, most of Ukraine was once part of a Polish empire. It's gone back and forth. Now everybody talks about Russian expansion, but now we're in a position of Polish NATO expansion.
Oh, indeed. And of course you could put Georgia into that and putting
Well, Georgia was never part of a Polish empire. Georgia is another question. I'm saying this is much more serious because Ukraine has got major Russian military bases. Taking Ukraine into NATO means war, and it could mean world war.
Oh, it's very serious business. I agree with you. And there is nothing, absolutely nothing, reported about this in the U.S. And I'm sure Moscow is furious about what's happening and not taking any of this, sitting down. And we manufacture that horrible orange revolution that put the Ukrainian government in power, and the same thing in Georgia with the Rose Revolution, putting that horrible government in power. These states were former Soviet republics, and we want to dominate them. Just imagine if Russia wanted to dominate Quebec or Northern Mexico.
If Russia were moving into Quebec and Mexico at the same time.
indeed. We'd be apoplectic in this country. Oh, let's take another break, Diana, and then we have just a short time left. The hour flies
by. Okay.
Welcome back. I'm on with Diana Johnstone. Just a few minutes left, Diana. Let me just mention one thing, and then you finish up. In your Gaza article, you talk about so counterproductive to be closely tied to Israel as the occupation of Palestine goes on. Much of the Middle East gets radicalized. Just so counterproductive. And then Ukraine, Georgia, Czechoslovakia, Poland, putting offensive missiles and radar, provocative acts in Czechoslovakia, in Poland. And, the Russians are just going to sit back and take this without reacting. So we risk heaven only knows what by these terrible policies.
Well, also we can't afford them. We're risking war, and when they talk about the economic crisis, the thing that isn't spoken enough about is the cost of these wars. One of the reasons the country is going broke is all of this money spent on the military. You could just, instead of voting the taxpayers to bail out the banks, just cut the Pentagon budget in half.
Oh, indeed. Indeed.
As a starter, and stop sending over $3 billion a year of taxpayers' money to Israel.
Absolutely.
Just cut off Israel, and the Israelis might have to think a little bit about the welfare of their neighbors if they're not being supported by the United States taxpayers, including all of the Israeli bonds that are purchased by trade unions and local governments. That war, you see, is being financed by the United States, and then Americans say, why do people in that part of the world hate us? Well, that's why.
Well, indeed. If the bailout of the bank is, doesn't end up bankrupting us, Diana, the terrible spending on the military, the militarism of this country, and the hundreds of billions every year that pours into that military machine, for what? For what? To support the defense interests in this country and the generals and whatever. The Pentagon is a force unto itself.
Excuse me, but the congressmen keep voting for that because
They
get a little bit of pork barrel in their district.
Oh, absolutely. That's the way the dirty game goes on there. They all get a piece of the action, so who can turn it down? Oh, such an ugly system.
And you see, that's really the war. There isn't any sensible strategic aim anymore. It used to be to stop communism. Well, communism was stopped. They go right on. There's a kind of inertia which really comes from Congress. You have to buy weapons, purchase weapons from the Pentagon, which doesn't even know what to do with them half the time, or they send them off to other countries to cause other wars. It's really the military industrial complex that has been running this country forever and ever, and it goes on that way until people would wake up and demand an economy that's geared to human uses instead of war. But I see no sign of that.
I don't either. And the only good that I can see coming out of the economic crisis, Diana, is it will so disrupt the system in this country that something different will come out of this. But who knows what it will be? I really think there'll be changes, because there have to be. But again, I have no idea. Better, worse, I just don't know. That music means we're at the end of the hour. Oh, I wish we could go on. I do hope you'll come back, and I'll send you an email on your talks, because I absolutely would like to see what you have to say. What you have to say is very important to me, and I'll shoot you an email, Diana.
Okay.
Thank you so much for coming on. This has been a wonderful hour, and it will be archived, so people who missed it can tune in and listen to it.
Okay.
And I welcome listeners to come back tomorrow for another live program.
Okay, have a good day, as they say over there.